Okay. Hello, angels. This is a very different audio than you're used to getting from me. I am doing some safe for work recordings. A couple days ago, I had talked about doing some hysterical literature, and I'm going to do that. This series, the Rejected Princesses series, is going to both be safe for work and not safe for work. Depending on the audio you click on, I'll be sure to link both of them. The safer work ones are going to be a Discord exclusive because I don't think Reddit is gonna give a shit about them. So if you're hearing this one, this is the first one, and it is safe for work, and you're probably a member of the Discord. So that's great. Thanks for being here. It's been fucking cool. You're all pretty good. Good people. Super supportive and kind. This book, I did mention it, is called Rejected Princesses by Jason Parath. It's fantastic. It's full of a bunch of short stories that are very true, very honest, and kind of brutal when it comes to the subjects. It paints them in a good light. It paints them in a very real light, in a way that you wouldn't hear in a textbook, especially an American textbook. The ones that sort of whitewash history and tell the side of the survivors and the winners. So this is a little bit more gritty than that. That being said, the story that I'm going to read today, this book rates things on a maturity rating from 1 to 5. I picked one that's a maturity rating 1 just to start things off. And I think most of the not safe for work audios will probably also be maturity rating 1 or 2, because as it gets in, there's some tags for like rape and self-harm. And I don't want to be doing hysterical literature with those sort of, trigger warnings, because I don't think it's fair. And I think it's really inappropriate to paint those stories in that kind of light. The story today does have a trigger warning for abuse, and it has a trigger warning for sex. The sex is then relates to a teen pregnancy, and the abuse, though not pretty graphic, it is present. So if either of those things upset you, I will not be offended if you click away. In fact, I encourage you to. I never want you to do anything that makes you uncomfortable. This is not the place for that. So, let's get to it. I'm reading about Wilma Rudolph because it's a pretty modern story, quote modern. She was born in 1940 and she lived until 1994 in the United States, in the South. And her little, her title, because every woman that's in this book gets a little title by the author. And she is the Olympic runner who beat polio. So I'm gonna get started reading. I've never read like this to somebody before, so I hope you like it. Here we go. If anyone ever had the cards stacked against them, it was Wilma Rudolph. Born into the segregated southern United States, Wilma was the 20th of her father's 22 children. With her parents' annual income never topping $2,500, she lived in utter poverty her entire childhood. She made dresses out of cloth sacks, used candles in outhouses in place of electric lights and plumbing, and had to take a Greyhound bus, where she was forced to sit in the back, 50 miles to the nearest hospital. It was a trip she had to take often. Before the age of 7, she had contracted scarlet fever, measles, mumps, whooping cough, pneumonia twice, and, worst of all, polio. The disease took away her ability to walk, forced her to miss most of her entire kindergarten year and a lot of second grade, or first grade, left her leg in braces until the age of 11, and instilled in her a deep-seated feeling of inadequacy. Consider how likely it was then that by the age of 20, this little girl would become a 3-time Olympic gold medal winner after becoming an unwed teen mother. But it happened. For all of the setbacks life handed her, Wilma had one key strength: her family. After Wilma's disabling bout with polio, her family took turns massaging her legs until she could walk again. When she started running competitively, they cheered her on, and gradually she became so good that the scouts took notice. When she became pregnant, the father, her high school sweetheart, initially took no responsibility. The family kept it a secret, and her sister Yvonne would raise the baby so that Wilma could focus on her athletics. Wilma competed in both Melbourne, and Rome Olympics. Prior to Melbourne, she didn't even know what the Olympics were. She'd never been on an airplane, let alone traveled out of the country. Although she didn't take home any gold medals, she did return with a fervent desire to win. 4 years later, when she did, taking gold for the 100-meter dash, 200-meter dash, and the 4x100-meter relay. The reaction to her victories was overwhelming. Not only was Wilma the first American woman to ever win 3 golds in track and field, but she'd also beaten the Russians at the height of the Cold War, establishing herself as one of the first famous black female athletes in the world. She met President John F. Kennedy, Vice President Lyndon B. Johnson, and the Pope, starred in newsreels sent around the country, and even appeared in the Ed Sullivan Show. There was also a TV movie made of her life stories, starring Cecily Tyson and young Denzel Washington. Wilma quickly used her newfound fame for good. When her hometown of Clarksville, Tennessee, put on a parade for her return, she made her attendance contingent on the parade being integrated. This condition put her in direct conflict with the governor, who had run a strict segregation platform, but in the end, Wilma prevailed. It was not all celebration thereafter, though. Wilma's track and field teammates, feeling slighted, eventually turned on her. Before one banquet, they hid her hair products so she had to appear without her hair done. Later, they intensely threw a relay match with Britain, running slower than they could, only to see Wilma pour out the speed in the last leg and narrowly eke out a win. Gradually, feeling that her peers saw her as a rival or a threat, she retired from running, reuniting with her high school sweetheart, and then settled down. Her post-Olympics life was one of setbacks and disappointment. She won her medals in the era before sponsorship for athletes, and without a lot of knowledge of what the world of entertainment and agents, Wilma had no idea how to parlay her victories into more opportunities. She moved her family around often and worked a series of menial jobs. Moreover, her fame provided her only temporary insulation against racism. A white man spit on her and her children the same day Martin Luther King was shot. Nevertheless, she stayed strong. In her autobiography, she never shared her failures, only her successes. Even as she struggled towards the end of her life, after divorcing her husband because he wanted a traditional, subservient woman, she would face poverty again, and she never complained. She kept striving all the way to the end. Wilma Rudolph died of brain cancer at age 54, happy with her life of ups and downs. "The triumph can't be had without the struggle," she said. "And I know what struggle is." There's a beautiful picture here. If you guys are curious, I will take a picture of it for you and send it, because the art in this book is fucking amazing. But that would be installment one of Rejected Princesses. I don't know. I might do a couple more safer work ones before I break into the hysterical literature, if you guys like this. If you don't, that's super fine. This doesn't have to be your cup of tea. But thank you for listening, angels. I appreciate you very much. I hope you're having a wonderful day.